Welcome to episode 1473 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive. 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, Matthew reflected on the cost of discipleship. Now he considers why he was chosen to write the gospel that bears his name. Acts of the Apostles, Part 5, Chapter 3.
When I first began following Jesus, I imagined my story started the morning he stopped at my tax booth. It is natural to think that way. We remember the moment our own lives changed, not the thousand moments that made that change possible. Years later, after I had listened to the others tell their stories, Andrew recalling the Jordan, John speaking of the Baptist, the wedding at Cana, the journey through Samaria, I realized my story had begun long before I knew I was part of it. While I sat balancing accounts in Capernaum, God was preparing his Messiah in places I never saw. At the Jordan, heaven declared him the beloved Son. In the wilderness, he faced the tempter and emerged faithful where Israel had failed. He revealed his glory at a wedding feast, challenged corruption in the temple, spoke through the night with a searching Pharisee, and offered living water to a Samaritan woman beside a well. None of those moments included me. Yet every one of them was moving history toward the day we would meet. At the time, they reached me only as stories. Travelers carried them north. Fishermen repeated them while waiting to pay their taxes. Merchants argued over whether the reports had been exaggerated. I heard fragments, a miracle here, a confrontation there, another village stirred by his teaching. Like any accountant, I sorted the information, weighed its reliability, and filed it away. I had no idea I was quietly assembling evidence that would one day overturn my entire understanding of the world. Then John was imprisoned, and Jesus came to Galilee. Many expected him to establish himself in Jerusalem, where influence could be measured and power displayed. Instead, he chose Capernaum, a crossroads where fishermen, merchants, soldiers, pilgrims, Pharisees, Gentiles, and tax collectors all passed one another every day. I understand now that he was already revealing something about his kingdom. He did not begin at the center of religious respectability. He began where every kind of person might hear the invitation. Looking back, I see the wisdom of God in all of it. Before Jesus ever called me to leave my ledger, he had already begun writing a far larger story than mine. His ministry did not arrive in Capernaum by accident. It came there by divine design. And before I ever imagined following him, he had already been walking, teaching, healing, confronting, and preparing the road that would one day lead him to my table.
Mistake your past for your identity. Do not mistake your failure for your future. Do not decide that because others have stopped looking for you, I have stopped looking too. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost.
I arrived as a former collaborator with Rome, a man the other disciples had every reason to distrust, and I was handed a place at the table and told to keep up. And then I wrote a gospel, the longest one, the one with five great discourses, the most systematic presentation of the teaching, the one most carefully structured to make the case to people who knew their Torah and needed to understand how Jesus stood in relation to it. Why me? A gospel is not a diary. I want to say that clearly because people sometimes read the Gospels as if they were eyewitness accounts flowing directly from observation to page, unmediated, raw. That is not what they are. A Gospel is a constructed argument. It selects, it arranges, it places events in relationship with each other and with the tradition they are completing. It asks not merely what happened, but what it means, and it organizes the what happened in service of the what it means. This requires a particular kind of mind, one that can hold a large body of material, identify the significant details, understand how the pieces relate to the whole, and present them in an order that makes the argument without losing the event. These are not the skills of a fisherman. They are, with respect to Peter and Andrew and the sons of Zebedee, the skills of an educated man who has spent his professional life organizing information in service of argument. They are the skills of a tax collector. I also had something none of the others had in quite the same way. I knew what it felt like to be excluded from the invitation, not theoretically, in my body. Every Sabbath I had not been permitted to enter, every synagogue that had closed its doors to my testimony, every righteous neighbor who had looked through me rather than at me. When Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," I knew what poor in spirit felt like from the inside. When he said, "I have not come to call the righteous but sinners," I knew what sinners felt like when they heard that sentence for the first time. I was writing for them. I was writing as one of them. The most credible witness to the gospel of the unlikely is the unlikely witness. Let me tell you what I was trying to do in the simplest terms I can manage. I was writing for Jewish readers who knew the scriptures well and needed to understand why Jesus was not a disruption of the story they already knew, but its completion. So I began where the story begins. With Abraham, with David, with the long line of promise running through Israel's history toward the one who would fulfill it. 14 generations. The arithmetic of a man who counted things for a living. I organized the teaching into 5 great discourses: the Sermon on the Mount, the mission instructions, the parables of the kingdom, the community teaching, the end times teaching. 5, like the 5 books of Moses, not by accident. I wanted the reader to feel the resonance. This is what the law was always pointing toward. This is the Moses who gives not stone tablets, but a new heart. I quoted the prophets 53 times. Every significant event I narrated, I placed in relation to what had been said before, not to prove a point mechanically, but because the story is one story, and any account of its fulfillment must show its continuity with its own past. And I recorded things the other Gospels do not record, because my training told me to record everything and trust the significance to emerge from the record. The wise men from the East, the Gentiles who recognized the king, the king's own people, missed. The dream of Pilate's wife, the guards at the tomb, the appearance on the Galilean mountain at the very end, when he said, "Go and make disciples of all nations," the same phrase Isaiah had used, the same horizon the prophets had always been gesturing toward, I built a case. That is what a tax collector turned evangelist does. He builds the case, documents the evidence, presents the argument in the most compelling order he can find, and rests it on testimony he believes to be true. Every time I organized a scene, I had to ask, what does this reveal about who he was? Every time I placed a parable, I had to understand what it was doing in the argument. Every time I recorded his response to a question from the Pharisees, or a request from the disciples, or a cry from someone in the crowd, I had to sit with it long enough to hear what he was actually saying underneath what he appeared to be saying. The gospel took me back through 3 years of following and made me look at it differently, not as a sequence of events, but as a pattern. And the pattern I saw, the thing that became clearer the longer I worked on it, was this. He was always moving toward the ones who had been told they did not qualify, the tax collector at the booth, the woman who touched the hem of his garment in a crowd, the Canaanite woman who argued with him about the crumbs under the table and won, the centurion who said, "I am not worthy to have you come under my roof," and yet received the highest praise Jesus ever gave to a request for healing, the lepers, the blind, the possessed, the dead, the ones who had been told, "The invitation is not for you." He walked toward every single one of them. That is the pattern. That is the argument. That is what I spent years trying to capture in a form that would survive me and reach people I would never meet. I wrote a gospel about the unlikely because I am the unlikely.
God rarely wastes the gifts he has given us. even when we have spent years using them for the wrong purposes. The kingdom of God is not built on the worthiness of those who enter. It is built on the mercy of the King who calls them. To be continued.